Where does the Democratic victory leave the Republican Party? We called conservative political columnist William Safire to find out what he thinks. Safire is a former speechwriter for Richard Nixon. A couple of weeks ago, Safire told us he was thinking the unthinkable. He was thinking of voting for Clinton. Did he actually do the unthinkable?
Yep, I revealed it. I said, although the New York Times columnists never endorse anybody, because that's against the rules, traditionally, anybody could tell who I was against, and then I went into a diatribe against the lying that came out of the Bush White House. So, yes, I went ahead and, for the first time in my life, took the jump and voted for a Democrat for president.
How did it feel?
Not great. I mean, there's nothing I plan to do again.
So, what are your hopes and what are your reservations about the Clinton administration?
Well, I hope they govern the way they campaigned. They knew what they were doing. They were generally centrist. They were not overly impressed by pressure groups. Whether it was organized labor or organized anything. And I think if they hew to that, if they act like a national government rather than a coalition of interests, they should be successful.
And your reservations?
I have a hunch that they're going to get jerked to the left, that they'll be pushed into stimulating the economy when it doesn't need it, by that I mean driving up inflation. And if they do that, that'll increase the deficit and louse things up for the next couple of years.
So what do you think is going on now within the Republican Party between the conservative and moderate wings?
We're going to have a Donnybrook, which is a fine thing. I mean, I remember after the 1964 debacle, We picked ourselves off the floor and say, okay, we can't do that again. And the hard right will clash with the reasonable right, and conservatives will split. And then I would hope within a couple of years start not coming back together, but at least talking to each other and having a good convention and a good primaries.
What do you think is the future of Lynn Martin, the labor secretary who really was on so many talk shows during this campaign? She was one of the chief spokespeople for the Bush campaign.
Well, there's possibly a future for her in television.
Do you think she'll have a future in the party?
It runs for something, yeah. She's been a congresswoman, and I think she ought to get back into looking to see what she can run for in Illinois.
What do you think James Baker's future is going to be?
I think he'll be on a lot of heavy corporate boards and go back to making money, and home should hold no horrors for him.
And what about Dan Quayle?
He has more of a future politically, but it's foggy now. I think he has to let himself spend a couple of years thinking and working and operating the private sector, and then... look, anybody who ever worked for Nixon, like as I do, has to believe in comebacks and redemptions. And I think Quayle will be a factor.
What do you think were some of the high and low points last night in the acceptance and concession speeches?
They sounded like acceptance speeches. They were that long. And it was as if they couldn't let go of campaigning. And you felt like plucking them on the sleeve and say, hey, you won. You forget it now. Say something nice about the other guys you did, and then don't launch into a stump speech. The stump is gone, and but they just couldn't resist. And as soon as they see the red light go on the camera, they start talking. And I think that's they have to discipline themselves a little bit.
I thought Gore's speech was especially well written. Do you have anything to say about his speech, or do you have any idea who wrote it?
Long. I don't know. I don't know any of the speechwriters, but as they come to Washington, I hope to meet them and tell them all, shorten it up, fellas.
Much as I liked his speech, I thought the low point of the speech was the Great Ship USA, which I thought sounded alarmingly like the Good Ship Lollipop.
There's a Shirley Temple quality to that, yeah. But seriously, the greatest concession speech, I guess, was Adlai Stevenson's, where he referred back to Abraham Lincoln's story of the little boy who said, too old to cry and it hurts too much to laugh. And if George Bush had done something like that, I think it would have gone out better. But his concession was fairly gentlemanly and honorable and gracious. I only wish he didn't have to read it.
One of the issues you've been writing about for a long time is Iraqgate. And with President Bush leaving office, how do you think his exit will affect the investigations into Iraqgate and into the Iran-Contra affair?
I think what will happen, if he's smart, he'll tell his attorney general to seek the appointment of a special prosecutor before the December 15th deadline. If he does, then he goes to the courts, and the courts pick a special prosecutor, and then the thing gets taken out of politics and becomes a real investigation. If he doesn't do that, then one of two other things will happen. One, the Democratic House and Senate will pass a new special prosecutor's bill or independent counsel bill, which the president will sign. He's told me he would sign it, and he said it in no uncertain terms. Clinton did. And in that case, then in February, there'll be a new special independent counsel appointed, and then that'll be off to the races. But I think if that is delayed that long, if Bush fails to act now, then what will happen is the Senate and the House will get together and appoint a select committee, a combined committee, to really do a job on this the way... remember the old Watergate days.
What did you think of the rhetoric of the last few days of the campaign in which President Bush was calling Al Gore ozone and calling Clinton and Gore bozos and saying my dog Millie knows more about foreign affairs than they do?
My feeling is that we mustn't get too hypersensitive in politics. Politics ain't beanbag, as Mr. Dooley said. And if you call somebody a couple of bozos, you call him a couple of clowns. A bozo is a clown. And so what's so terrible about that? And my dog Millie knows more about foreign affairs. That's, I think, reasonable hyperbole. And to get on your high horse and suddenly take offense and, my goodness, he called me, that's silly.
So you wouldn't have recommended against it had Bush asked you your advice?
I would not have, no. He was in his Harry Truman mode I think the candidacy was beyond saving, so at that point, if he felt it in his heart to say, I wouldn't have stopped him.
Can you give us a preview of what the column is that you're writing now?
It's about the way Republicans feel sad but not weepy about losing. And we are dry-eyed, and the column is about why we're that way. And read it.
I will.
Great.
Good. William Safire, you're on deadline. I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye. William Safire writes a political column for the New York Times and a language column for the Times Sunday Magazine. His latest book is called The First Dissident. It's about the Book of Job and contemporary politics.